Another year has come and gone. Are you wondering what the future holds? Are you struggling with the decision about love, money, your career, your family? StarPsychics.com, that stars with a Z, has the answers you desire. StarPsychics.com is the best and brightest advisor site on the internet, staffed by top-rated, professional, fully tested, and certified advisors. This is the real deal. At StarPsychics.com, you create your own personal account, and you pick your advisor by reading their extensive bios. Then you decide on a budget that you are comfortable with. Your pathway to a clearer and brighter future is just a few clicks away. No gimmicks, no bait and switch. StarPsychics.com has daily blogs and lots of links to help you develop your own intuition. Log on now. That's StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. And here's the best part. They're available 24/7. StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. You must be 18 years or older. Your future awaits.
Hello, everybody. I see my guest has called in, and we'll bring her on in a few minutes. I'm going to connect her right now. But anyways, this is StarCast, also known as Natalie. Everybody knows this, right? By now, right? So today I have a guest that's going to be so popular with the ladies, and sometimes the men, too, because of what she does, what she shows you how to do. I mean, this lady is phenomenal, really, she is. I want to tell you quickly, when I tell you to go to her site, you must go there. It is the most beautiful site I have seen. The colors are right up my alley. I'm trying to get my webmaster to do the turquoise look, you know, that kind of thing. But anyways, I'm going to tell you a little bit about Stars with the Z Psychics.com, as my friend Kim was just telling you. We still have the first 3 minutes are free for a new client, and then the second thing that you buy, should you buy something else, that's also a special for new clients only. I think it's really slow now, but I've been getting feelers out there, and it's just slow for everybody. I mean, after all, people are more worried about paying for gas and food on the table and all of that. But we're okay. You know, we have the regulars that come in, and it's all good. So, and also now, let's talk about Mystic Living today. I have everything pretty much done for the new issue. You can go to it today, mysticlivingtoday.com. I'm still getting stuff this morning, as a matter of fact. I just saw something come through. So I'll put them in even tomorrow. I mean, it doesn't matter. I do it, I'll put it in. I mean, that's my motto anyways. And so, you know, if you have something, even for the next issue in January, send me an excerpt, poetry, book reviews, I do those. Well, actually, Jackie does all those, but you can request a book review. Anything, basically, just articles. And it doesn't have to be metaphysical. I mean, just so long as it's good stuff. And I have not ever gotten stuff that is not good. I mean, some of these people that I get stuff from is not their work. They're not metaphysical. They're not, but yet they have beautiful work that they've written, and they've been writing for my magazine for years. Matter of fact, I think it's like over 20. I think it's 21 years old now. Anyways, let's bring on our guest. She is, like I said, she's phenomenal. She's an educator, an author, a mentor. And I think she wants to tell us about be true to yourself. Listen to yourself. You can do all these beautiful things. So let's welcome her now. Judith Johnson, how are you?
Oh, I'm well, and I'm so grateful to be here with you, Natalie.
Oh, same here. You could probably give me some advice.
I think we all have things advice to learn from each other.
exactly. So your latest book is Making Peace with Death and Dying, A Practical Guide to Liberating Ourselves from the Death Taboo. You know, I seem to be getting people now, because it's applying to what's going on in the world. It's so important. That's really one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on, is because, you know, everybody's afraid. And another thing is everybody is just outspoken. Do you notice that? They're, like, speaking their mind. I think because they had time when they were home and they couldn't go out, they were thinking about all these things that bother them. And all they're doing now is, I'm finding that a lot. It's quite disturbing to me because, I mean, I don't mind you speaking your mind, but, you know. So anyways, tell us about this book. First of all, though, let's tell us about how you started. I mean, you have a PhD. You have all this education. You're not going to like when I tell you I didn't graduate from high school.
I believe that all the degrees that I do have are not what taught me what I know. What I know, I've learned through experience.
Life, right?
Yeah. Experience is the best teacher. We just don't give ourselves degrees in it.
Right, right. Well, you know, I had a man who was a teacher. He's a PhD like you, and he told me, he was on a couple times, and he told me, he says, you know, you, he said, have learned from life. And he said, you know, we can't, as teachers, we can't teach you everything. You have to have your feet on the ground, like boots on the ground, right? And you have to go and experience everything. It's those are life's lessons, and that's how we learn. But how did you get into writing, and what made you want to go get all of this? I mean, you have a PhD. That's a lot of education.
Yeah. I actually have two doctorates, so I'm a glutton for punishment.
Yes, yes, that's good. Awesome.
I'll tell you what, all of my life, and I write about this, is that at the age 10, I had this serendipitous event where my mother gave me a book for Christmas about the world's great religions. And I remember in my little 10-year-old mind, it was as though somebody was just blowing open my mind and letting me know that there were other worlds out there other than the one that I lived in. And I started experiencing the resonance of deep beliefs. It's like I would read something from Taoism and say, wow, I believe that too, or something from Buddhism. And I was raised a devout little Catholic girl.
Me too.
And
okay, yeah.
Yeah, so my world was opened up, and I found the bridges of belief to other forms of belief and other ways of seeing the world. And that was a great comfort to me. But I would say that my entire life so far has been passionately about trying to understand and help others to understand that it all starts from how we perceive things, and to understand that our state of consciousness that we live in predetermines the experiences that we have, because that's the filter through which we experience our lives. So that's why I describe my mentoring work as renovating the mental and emotional scaffolding upon which we live our lives. Because if you're off kilter in how you're seeing things, like looking through eyeglass lenses that aren't the right prescription, you're not seeing clearly. You just aren't seeing clearly. But you're doing the best you can. But why not clean your glasses, get the right prescription, be able to see clearly and operate from there?
That's great. And you know, that is so true, because, you know, sometimes things look awful.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, this is not going to – look, this is a mess. And maybe a few days later, something will happen, and you'll look at it again, hopefully, and you'll say, well, gee, that's not so bad. But sometimes it has to be pointed out to you. So you're right. You're right on target. You know, you have to have somebody like yourself or me. I mean, I'm not – educated like you are, but I would say to somebody, wait a few days, it's probably going to change because of what I do. I mean, you're going to see that life has a way of twisting and turning, and so don't get upset about something. Don't.
Yeah.
Because you destroy everything that you already have, and you could be pleasantly surprised. First of all, to me, you have to believe. If you don't believe, you don't have anything.
Yeah, and there's two things I want to say in response to what you just said. One is we also have to pay attention to what the assumptions are that we carry, and many, many people assume that they're supposed to be happy all the time, and that's just not reality. And the second thing is that if you look with 20/20 hindsight at your life, you will usually discover that the greatest treasures that you have came through through experiences that were difficult.
Yeah, I can attest to that. Actually, my parents died less than 5 months apart of each other. I was an only child.
Wow.
And, but I don't even know what I learned from that. I mean, maybe you could tell me, because then down the road, my husband died of Alzheimer's 10 years ago, but it wasn't very kind to me. It was awful. I mean, it was the worst thing that, I mean, a lot of it had been worse, bad, but this was even more worse of what happened to him and how I was treated and what I was put through. So I guess maybe I learned from that. And you know what I learned, I think? You might figure it out better than I, to stand on my own 2 feet and know I can do this. I can do it.
But that's exactly what I mean about the lessons, because, and this is something else I want to respond to, because I hear you putting what I can, and correct me if I'm wrong, but perhaps too much value on the fact that I have degrees, and as opposed to yourself not having degrees. And I don't think that makes you any less wise than me, because I think it's important to recognize that in these degrees that we get, they are focused on the accumulation of information and knowledge. But what is the other area that is not taught in school, but is what we treasure the most, is the gaining of wisdom. And wisdom comes through spiritual connection and understanding and the elevating of our consciousness. That is not book knowledge. That is life experience.
Yeah, you can't teach that. You're right.
You can't teach it. And what you learned about yourself through your husband's Alzheimer's and how people treated you and all, that you could count on yourself. What a wonderful thing to know about yourself.
Yeah, you know, I didn't even think about it before, because I knew the worst was yet to come. And I didn't, I stood up to an awful lot from him, you know, and mm-hmm. it happens with people who have Alzheimer's. That's what happens to them.
Yeah.
But I stand tall, really, because I did it. You know, he stayed home. I took care of him at home, and after talking to my son, and I did it. I did it, Judith,
yeah.
And you know, to tell somebody else that, and they'd say, "Well, I couldn't do that. I'd have to put him someplace." Well, that's you. That wasn't me. And you know, I've always taken care of my whole life. I worked in a nursing home. I worked in a beauty shop. I worked in a tennis club. Always taking care of other people's needs. So it was right up my alley.
Yeah.
This was the big test. This was the big test. It really was.
But you got to know something about yourself that nobody can take from you.
That's true. In the most dire situations, life-threatening, and it was, I responded in the right way, and that's why I'm still alive today.
Yeah.
I knew. It was instinct, you know. But I did have a visitation from Jesus, so I knew I had help, but I've always, because I'm a Catholic girl too, just like you, you know, and lots put on religion, but if you can take something from wherever you came from, it's a good thing. It just taught me to believe, and all I did was see his feet and his robe. I got up out of the bathroom, unlocked the door, and I was good to go, and it never happened again to me. I never felt that I was feeling I can't do this. I just can't do that. I'm alone. You know, and I had to lock the doors. But I was lucky he didn't try to go out. He just tried to always hurt me. But I'm here. I'm here. I did it. And I'm proud of it.
And you know, whatever our religious or spiritual beliefs, when we draw upon the imagery, the metaphors, leadership that we relate to. I mean, you know, I was raised with Jesus also. And it reminds me of a friend of mine who shared with me once that she was on the treadmill and she was just really, it just couldn't bear it, you know, and you would think, well, so what? But she was on the treadmill and it was unbearable to her. She said, "This is so hard." And then she saw Jesus on the cross and heard, "Now this is hard."
Exactly. And, exactly. And, you know, I have always felt that I was with Jesus at that time. It's always been with me, even as a little girl. And I wanted to gather everybody up because that's what I can do. I didn't, you know, I realized that people will follow me. They'll, come on, let's go, let's fix this. Well, he told me to stop. No.
Yeah.
No, you're going to end up dying. I don't want that for you. I'm doing this for everyone, for all. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, and he came to me when I was in a vehicle. We have to talk about this, I guess, because it's a part of your belief. I was in a vehicle, and I looked down at the ground, and I saw this man with just feet, no shoes, and his robe and a robe. I could see it. Then I looked up, and he was all scuffy and all, you know, I'd had no clue who this man was. Now, this was in a dream, and he doesn't usually come to you in a dream. And I looked at him, and then he kind of looked beyond my door in my vehicle. So I looked behind, and here comes all the apostles.
Wow.
And I looked back at him, and he didn't talk. I couldn't hear him. I put in my head, "Now do you believe me?"
You know,
and not that I had doubt, and he touched my arm, and he said, "Everything is going to be just fine for you."
Yeah.
And so, but those kinds of things you remember, and it has nothing to do with being raised a Catholic or Protestant or whatever it is. It doesn't matter, you know. Those are important little things, and I guess it was preparing me for what was going to happen. You know,
yeah.
And most people think I can do anything. You know, oh, give it to Natalie; she can do it. Well, you know, I can't swim and I can't skate. Now, you know what? Always I had a fear of, and you're going to relate to this because of you being in school and all of that. I always had this fear that if I went beyond high school, I wouldn't do good at all.
Mm-hmm.
And because this was one reason, because my parents worked. They were from that era where money was important because they came from nothing, and I was alone. And I thought, how am I going to ever do this? You know, how am I going to, you know? And but then I went on to beauty school, and I got my license right out of high school, even though I didn't graduate. So I did something. And,
which again is part, I just want to call to your mind something that you just said that I heard again was earlier when you said about taking care of your husband with Alzheimer's, and what you learned is that you can take care of yourself. You've been teaching yourself that all your life. When you went to beauty school, you probably did that so that you would know that you could take care of yourself.
And not even know it.
Exactly. So you've been teaching yourself that all your life, and maybe that's one of your primary karmic life lessons.
Yeah, that could be. I have a degree in life.
Exactly.
I do. I mean, you know, and so do you. It's not always about education, but why did you go on and get so many degrees? Why did you get 2 doctorates? I'm just curious for myself.
Okay, well, let me go through it a little bit. My first doctorate was in social psychology, which is really about how our identities are impacted by our affiliations, okay, whether with this family, this religion, this business, this culture, that kind of thing. And that has always been something I've wanted to understand. And I got this degree through the Union Institute and University, which was the first university without walls, which was a concept that was education for an adult learner that gave us much more freedom and responsibility for the design of the program itself. So, for example, I chaired my own committee. I appointed my committee. I had to design my program and get approval from the institution and all of that. But it allowed me to study in a way that was interdisciplinary between spirituality, business, and psychology. Okay, because I needed to integrate those 3 disciplines to understand better. And my dissertation from that program, you're going to love this, was called The Politics of Greed, an Interdisciplinary Study and Spiritual Interpretation of the Causes, Dynamics, and Consequences of Greed in Contemporary American Society. And that was a pinnacle for me to be able to get that out of my system, to have to write that, because greed has always been something that's bothered me so much, that how can we be so selfish and not care about other people, you know? So I needed to look deeply at that issue. So that was
my son
that
and
was
I were just talking about that this morning, Judith.
Yeah.
You know, he was talking about how he opens the door and people are so surprised.
Yeah.
And he said, "Mom," he said, "you do it too. You're not a guy,
yeah.
you're a lady. And
yeah.
he said, why can't everybody be like that? I said, well, you know, I think that's a good question because I don't really know. I mean, I didn't have that from my parents. It was a learned thing some other way. I did not,
mm-hmm.
I didn't learn it from them. You
mm-hmm.
know, I mean, I learned how to try to fix things because my dad was a machine repairman and he taught me about the wrenches and I know everything about that. And he would take me to the airport to watch the airplanes every Saturday because I wanted to fly. But, you know, I you know, it's just something that I can do, some things that I can do. And I don't even know how I learned them. I don't.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but you know, the piece about greed goes back to, you know, when we try to understand other people through the lens of our own understanding, it's really, it's so difficult sometimes. Like you look at the struggle between Republicans and Democrats right now, which
yep.
I don't want to go into any further, but
no.
they are such different states of consciousness, completely
well,
different states
yeah.
of, well, But if you were to be able to diagram or in some sense of neutral understanding, really look at what the assumptions and beliefs and priorities are of those individuals in those two categories, just as a generalization, they're so different. But those beliefs absolutely justify and inform every choice they make. And that's true of all of us as individuals. And so I went back and looked at this issue of greed because to me that was the most fundamental wound that we have so often
mm-hmm.
is that we say I matter and you don't. You look at every form of racism, every form of ism on the planet is
well,
about
it's true.
I care about me, but I don't care about you.
Exactly.
And I'm justified in that. Yeah.
Exactly. It makes me sad. I get sad.
Yes,
It really does because,
yeah, it is.
You know, I mean, why were we created differently? What was the learned experience? What did we have? Mine was not a learned thing. Mine was within. And I don't question it because I'm very strong with it. I mean, I feed 6 deers in my backyard faithfully. 6 of them, big ones, big
mm-hmm.
buck and a big doe, an alpha. And I love it. I mean, I get so much delight in it. I really, really
mm-hmm.
do. And, you know, I'm taking care of something else. I'm not being greedy
yeah.
and say, well, go fend for yourself, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it's just like opening doors and helping people with their packages. And I'm not very big. I'm 5'2", 102 pounds. So for me,
oh, my Lord.
Something is, you too?
Yeah. No, I'm probably almost twice your size.
Okay, well, so if somebody is struggling, you know, I see them and it's instinct. I go, can I help you? They probably look at me, well, how in the world are you going to help me? But I said, you know I don't look big, but I might surprise you. And I'm always, my son and I help people with groceries out. I reach up on cabinets and she's probably as tall as me and I'll say, I'll get that for you. And I step up on this little thing and they probably wouldn't like it if I did. They saw it and I'll get whatever she needs. And one lady paid me such a compliment, and I never had heard it again. She went to her husband. She says, I think she's an angel.
But you
and
see,
I thought to myself, you betcha. I'm going to keep doing this. If you need me and I'm there, you're going to get my help if you need it.
But again, when you ask the question about, you know, why and how you know that that's something that's inside of you that's different from what's inside of a lot of other people, and that brings to mind for me the fact that one of the things that I believe very strongly in is in karma and reincarnation, and that this is not the first and only lifetime we lead. So
mm-hmm.
if you think of that, and when I ask the question, one of my favorite questions is, who is I? You know, we all use the word I this and I that and I the other thing, and we
mm-hmm.
tend to use that word referring to the distinctions of our own body and personality, self, from another's. But in reality, from my point of view, if you think of I as a spiritual identity, there is a oneness from which we are all the same, and that there are, I think each of us, how do I say that? Let me say it this way. Okay. The term hue H-U is Sanskrit for God, okay? So I find it fascinating that we're humans, so that it's like we are divine and in manifest form. And
yes.
So we're the visible and the invisible merged together. And how do you go about being an invisible spiritual being housed in a manifest form of the identity of your body, your personality, your name, your education, and all of that? It's a very fascinating thing. But if you think about it as maybe this isn't the first time I've done this, so maybe I've learned some things, you know, again, going back to what we were saying about experience being the best teacher, maybe I've learned some things in other identities, in past lives that I've brought forward that have altered the state of consciousness that I live in versus the state of consciousness that other people live in. We all are so complex.
We are. We are. And, you know, I not getting along, not being able to come to agreements, that's just doesn't make any sense to me. We're all human beings. Sit at the table. Keep quiet until I call on you. And we're going to solve this, or we're not leaving until we solve it. You see, that's how I would run a round table. You can't, no arguing, no nothing. Put your thoughts on paper. Tell me what you don't like and what you like, and we're going to come to an agreement, or else we're not leaving this room.
However, when the other people sitting at that table don't share the wisdom that you have of being able to look at it that way, they're sitting there saying, I'm not leaving here until I convince everybody else to do what I want.
That's right.
That's the challenge, is that that we don't have the same inner vision, the inner perspective on the same common issue.
How sad.
You know, and
everything
I want to bring
solved, Judith. Everything can be solved. The world is a very intelligent place. There are things that can be taken care of, but it's all about greed.
It's about greed, and it's about the level of awareness that you view life through. And if you look at it through a filter of lack, then you're going to be greedy. If you look at it through a filter of abundance, then you're going to say, what's the best way for us to distribute our resources so that everybody rises up? Ram Dass used to speak of a wonderful lesson about his foundation. I forget the name of it, where they did that eye surgery for people, third world countries. And they would get a donation, and they'd want to distribute to get the maximum impact with this group, and then we'll do the next group and the other. And the recipient said, no, give an equal distribution to everybody, and we will all rise at the same level. What a different philosophical response to the question, you know, to the challenge of not enough resources for the need. Do we all rise equally together?
I'm really grateful, Judith, for what I know and how I am, and I'm very proud. And I'm so proud of my son because he's just like me. And, I mean, you know, we were talking about that this morning. And, you know, I was just thinking when you were talking, oh, how I wish I could be in one of your classes. I would just love it. I'd be raising my hand all the time. You'd say, Natalie, shh. Because I'm inquisitive. I like to learn. And I'm not afraid to ask. That's another thing.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. We're not going to solve it all, unfortunately. But we can certainly talk about it. And it's in the ethers. It's out there. The universe is listening. And listen to those two, how great this is, how they feel about others and what they want to do, you know.
Right.
So,
and while we're not going to solve it all, as you say, look at what you've been doing all these years, and you say it so succinctly on your on your Facebook thing, bringing love and light to the world. What a wonderful mission. I mean, what more can we do? We do our part, and if each one of us does our part, that really helps the larger whole. In fact, if I may, I want to share an image with you. I had a dream once where I was in a one-room space, a huge space that was like a dome, and it was filled with every window was a different size and shape, and every window had a customized window shade on it. And the shades, some of them were fully closed, a few of them were open, and some were open a little bit. And I was in there with my mother. And my mother said to me, "What do we do?" And I impatiently said to her, "Well, obviously, we open as many shades as we can to get as much light in here as we possibly can." That was my dream.
Yes, because that's what you're about.
Yeah, that's what our purposes are. Yeah.
Yeah, is bring the light to the world. You know, an author told me I bring food for the world, soul food for the world. And this man that I had last week, he said to me, "Don't ever stop what you're doing." He said, "You have no idea what you're putting out." He said, "You're not famous?" "No." But he said, "I bet you most of the authors want to talk to you." And I said, "I'm surprised. Sometimes I'm surprised. Like, why did you want to do my show, Judith? Why? Why did you want to come
why?
On?"
Why?
Yeah.
Because your mission is to bring light and love to the world.
Oh, and yes. Of course, Sarah loves me. I've known Sarah for years.
Yeah.
She adores me. Yeah, and I adore her. That's true.
Yeah.
It's true. That's what I'm about. You know, even my other site, I'm locking horns with my webmaster because he seems to think that it should be about people. I said, "No, that's not it." I said, "You're not getting the picture." I said, "You have to understand this is about the universe. This is about the stars, S-T-A-R-Z. I said, "I had to explain it to him. I said, "You get it?" He said, "I don't know why I argue with you. You're always right." I said, "Well, then be quiet." Because I said, "This is about me. The site is me. You don't understand. You are the coder. You put up what I ask you to put up." I said, "But I want it, and I want the earth there. I have a designer that's in Kenya. She does my Pinterest, and she did a little design, and she had like the ocean at the under the earth. It was the most beautiful. I said, "I want that on my site. I want that. That's it. That's the universe. That's the world." "Oh, I get it now." "Oh, you do?" I said, "Don't argue with me. Who pays you? The tooth fairy?" "No. And, you know, if I could do this, I'd do it myself. I mean, I can, you know, but I know how to do HTML, but I can't do PHP. But anyways, that's the situation of people. See, he's thinking of the money. I'm thinking of the beauty of the world. I'm thinking of, well, you know, if they come to the site and see this, they're going to say, "Wow, that's gorgeous." And they're going to want to stay on the site because they have a good feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about the money. Like all the other sites are. I'm sorry, sites out there that might be listening or ever listen. You are about the money. I'm not. I'm just not. You know, I I do all this for nothing. I have for 20-some years.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'll get my cartridge for my printer. But other than that, no, I don't get a salary. And you know why? Because a man asked me. He said, "Well, why?" I said, "Because I love what I do, and it's my passion, and it's something I'm really good at, and I love meeting new people." I was a little girl, I was shy. I guess I was just kind of grooming myself a little. I was seeing what everything was, and all of a sudden, here I am. Look what I do.
Isn't it wonderful to do work that you love?
Yeah, it is. It is. It really, really is. And and you show how much you care. And I have 25 people that work on the site. I care. We're like a family. It's a stars family. You can't say that about the other big sites. I'm just showing that I'm unique, really, for the field that I'm in. But my magazine, that started, a bunch of girls said, "Well, you need to do this." And I thought, "Oh, geez, something else I got to do?" Yes, and then my webmaster then said, "Then you have to do a blog." So I do that, too. I have my gal, Jackie, does that. Candy does all the other stuff for the marketing and that. I'm sorry about that error. She went in right away and fixed it. But anyways, I don't know where it came from. She was impressed with your PhD, I guess. But anyways, it's to love what we do. If you can, at least part of your day, do it.
Yeah.
Because you
and
know
to,
what you're
and
doing.
To love what you do and have what you do be of a high vibrational level of things like bringing love and light to the world, it's like it doesn't get better than that. I mean, life is hard, yes, and maybe we don't have all the resources we wish we had, but on the inside, when you put your head on the pillow at night every night, you probably are filled with gratitude of what you were able to do that day.
I do. Sometimes, though, I get sad. I don't like being alone. And I have a love, but I know probably won't happen. I don't know. I believe. But anyways, besides that, I have a cat who adores me, loves me, you know. And sometimes I sit there in the lotus position, and I talk to God.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this, you saw the day that I had. It was pretty rough. It started off rough. But I came through with flying colors. And I did because of you. Because it's this inner part of me. I won't stop. I mean, and I think, hopefully I have a lot of years to keep doing this.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly want to. I don't know how many I've done. For 10 years I've been doing the show.
Wow.
But it got better and better and better. Like, people like you. I mean, goodness. You know? And all the publicists, they send me all this stuff. And I had five things to put in the magazine from one publicist. And to me, that's all amazing. It's all amazing. You know, I'm amazed. I guess I shouldn't be amazed. But you're right. When you do something that you love and everybody can see that, they know, oh, give it to Natalie. She'll do it. She'll do it upright. It'll look good. It's true. I will. And I'll sit up till midnight. You know, I will do that. You know, I have a few things to put in today, but I'm basically done yesterday. So I love it. And they send me beautiful notes when I send them links. Take a look at your page. And it's just the nicest feeling in the world.
Mm.
It makes it all good. And I tell God thank you at night like that because I have the inner strength. I have it. I know. You know, it's a beautiful thing. Like you, look what you do. Look what you do.
Yep. And I'm grateful that I get to do it.
Well, that's it. Now, the only thing, if you want to say I envy you, is all of your education, all of the times you sat in a college or whatever you did, you know, you worked on all of this stuff. There's a part of me that wishes that I could have had more education, but I guess I didn't need it.
Yeah,
for what my job was going to be.
I think it's important to recognize that you have had the education that you have needed on the inside, and it's not outer education that you needed to do what you do. It was inner.
Yeah.
And you and to me that has so much more value. And I'll share another piece with you, which is that my second doctorate is in what's called a new field called spiritual science.
I see that.
Yeah,
yes.
that looks at how do we bring forward such spiritual qualities as peace, caring, kindness, those loving. How do we bring those forward, and how do we predictably bring more of it forward? It's like, well, this works. Let me do more of this. So in that program, which was extremely personally intimate in the sense that we had to really excavate our own inner consciousness about where we get stopped, what gets in our way. And that's what we end up writing our treatise on. And in that program, what I wrote about was trust. And because I realized that the bottom line issue that I always faced was difficulty trusting myself, trusting God, and trusting other people. And that when I didn't have trust, I couldn't bridge the gap to others or to the reality. And so my dissertation was Life as a Trust Walk, From My Way to Yahweh.
Well, you
in
see,
other words,
you know,
to God.
You're touching on so many things that I'm recognizing in my own life.
And
then some I didn't even think of. You know, it's funny that my son and I had this conversation before I got on the air. And, you know, when we were talking about helping people, I mentioned my goddaughter because I said, oh, gosh, I've only flown a couple of times in my life. I don't know what I'd have to do. Her name is Heather. I said, I don't know what I'd have to do. I probably have to call you because she's been all over. You know, that was her job. That's her job. And she said, oh, no worries. I said, why? She said, listen to yourself. She said, I would have trouble asking somebody. You would have too many people helping you. She said, because you raise your hand and say, a little help over here. She said, no, it's a learning to you. I said, why? Yep. She says, because that's what you give out. That's who you are. She says, any fool can see. Well, this lady needs help, and she's going to be really grateful. I'm going to help you. So, you know, and we were just talking about all this, and here, look at you, what we're talking about, helping and greed and be willing to take a chance and be kind, and that's exactly what she told me. You will never have a problem. You might be afraid, she said, and you can call me and say, well, where do I go? What do I do? You know, she said, I'll get you started, but she says, from then on, just grab somebody.
Right.
She says, just
raise
your hand and say, I need a little help over here.
Right.
She said, and if you have heavy bags, I bet the three men will come and help you. And it's funny. It's just funny. I don't realize that, though, Judith. I don't realize I can do that. And there is that little fear in me, and I don't know why. And it's okay to have that fear, I suppose, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's amazing. I mean, and you, I mean, I just wish I could have been in your class. I would have. You're just such a great speaker. You, I would ask the right questions. You'd probably tell me to sit down and be quiet.
Well, sign up on my mailing list, and I'll keep you posted on all my all upcoming classes, and we can have some fun together.
Do you do it online?
Oh, absolutely. These to end.
Oh, okay.
More than ever.
I'm on your site right now. I will.
Yeah. On Zoom, yeah. And I have to tell you this because you know, were so complimentary about my website. My new website's even better. I'm actually going to launch my new website in about a week. So enjoy the one that's up there now because it's about to go down.
Yeah, well, that's my color. And that deep blue, of course, if you go to stars, you see that blue. That's me.
Yeah.
These are very spiritual colors, you know.
Yes.
And they make you feel good. They really, really do. So good. Oh, okay. Where do I sign up?
Go to where the door is that says the real secret to true happiness lies within, and that'll take you into the process.
Oh, there it is. I see it.
Yeah, that'll take you into the process. And it'll send you a free download.
Don't worry. I won't flood you with emails or be pushy. Okay, right there.
Yeah.
Okay,
and,
I will.
And it'll also send you a free download of a treasure of mine, which is a concept that we can talk about another time.
Yes, I would love to have you on again. Absolutely. I mean, the time is just flying by. You know, sometimes I'll look at somebody that's going to be on the show, and I don't really read about you. This is just off the cuff. You know, I mean, I have a gal that has questions here, she does, but I never look at them. She says, well, in case you ever want to. I said, those are your questions, not mine. And I thought, well, gosh, you scared me with your degrees, and I thought, oh, no, don't do that. Come on. I could talk to anybody. I could talk to the president. It would be a piece of cake. Don't worry. And I remind myself of that. Look at all the people you have talked to. And, it's been wonderful for me. I learned so much. I have a free class with you right now. See, this is a free class.
So can I tell you a little bit about my new book? Because I'm
so
proud of this.
Please, I want to get to that. We're talking about us. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's Making Peace with Death and Dying. Okay, practical guide to liberating ourselves from the death taboo. And let me give you a little background. It's the reason that I wrote this book was that when my mother was dying, and my mother and I, just another piece of background, we shared a home during the last 9 years of her life. And so I was frontline caregiving 24 hours a day, 7 days a week through 9 years of watching that process. And when she was on her deathbed, she grabbed my wrist. And when your mama grabs your wrist and looks deeply in your eyes and makes a request, you kind of have to do it, especially when she's on her deathbed. So that was in 2006. She grabbed my wrist and she said, promise me that you will write about what we have learned about about dying in a society that is ill at ease with this. And so that was that's why I wrote this book. And I wrote this book, five different versions of this book before I got to the book that's now being published. And it's been in the works since 2006. So it's an enormous completion for me. But the primary reason and the real motivation, aside from fulfilling my promise to my mother, is that it's, you know, as I did my research and the focal point of the book became clear, it's really based on the fact that there's 2.8 million Americans who die each year, and too many of them, and those who love and care for them, suffer through the experience, emotionally isolated, frightened, ignorant of their options, and unprepared spiritually and practically. What a shame that that's what we do with death in this society. So that's why I wrote this book, is to show people how to get free of that discomfort with death. Of course we're all afraid. It's the unknown. But the reality is, death is as normal as birth. But we have assigned it with this awful emotional content of, oh, my God, we have to avoid this like the plague.
Yeah.
But why?
Yeah, no. You're right. You're right. You're absolutely right about it.
And when somebody that you love is dying, they're still alive. Be with them and bring them, surround them with your love until, you know, right through their death. People get afraid. They treat the dying like they're contagious.
Before we go, but you're right. You're absolutely right. They are going to another place, a better place. Mm-hmm. Just think, they're going to be healthy. They're not going to have all these problems. They're going to be able to function. They're going to continue to do, to learn, to be. But because we haven't been there and come back, we don't know what it's like. That's what's scary. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting that in my research, one of the things that I did was since 2006, I have been tracking the imagery online for the word death. And if you look at the imagery over the years, it has consistently been scary images of the Grim Reaper, skulls and crossbones. And there are certain images that I traced back to the Black Plague in Europe was from 1348 to 1352. Okay.
Wow.
In that 4 years, half the population of Europe died. This is one of the deepest roots of why we have a death taboo in our society, is that in that time, and again going back to the image search, there are images today on the web that are the depictions of death that were drawn during the Black Plague by people who thought that the plague was a punishment by God, and they drew these images and put them on their clothing to fool death into thinking, I'm already dead, you can pass over me. Okay? Those same images still are here in 2021. Isn't that amazing? But that's how our consciousness holds the image of death. That started to change about 5 years ago when there was a legitimacy being brought to the images of near-death experiences. And what legitimized it was Evan Alexander, who is a neurosurgeon, who poo-pooed all of that stuff until he had his own near-death experience and went through the light, saw the light and the tunnel and all that stuff. And because he's a neurosurgeon, people listened to him, and he was able to reject his own prior rejections of the idea, because he used to tell everybody, no, it's just neurological impulses that are happening after death and blah, blah, blah. But it wasn't, because he knew from his own experience. Again, experience is the best teacher. And so now when you Google the word death and do an image search, you're starting to see images of the tunnel of light and, you know, these uplifting and pictures that have color in them, but
right.
that are comforting. And,
that's interesting to know. I never knew that.
Yeah. Yeah. And, And one of the questions that I bring up in my workshops and all is, what would happen if we were taught that death is as normal as birth, that it's not something to be scared of? You know, what would that be like? How would our lives be different?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like one of the things that was so disturbing for my mother was how, you know, at the very end of her life, when she was clearly dying, you know, all of these doctors were, you know, going back to ka-ching, ka-ching. These doctors are parading in and out of her room from this discipline discipline. You know, well, we could run this test or we could do this procedure. And it's like, no, let this poor woman die.
Yeah.
That's what's happening.
You're right.
You
yeah,
know,
and it's all about the money for doctors a lot of times, you know. I do FaceTime with my doctor. I don't even I can't get an appointment with him anyways. I can always talk to him on the phone. And because actually he's a better doctor when he's talking to me on the phone or we do via the app than in person. Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
He really,
yeah.
I really, one day I'll tell him that. You're so much better on the phone than you are. He was like this stringent, because I went in for my annual and and he wasn't even addressing or asked me, okay, what are your concerns? Do you have anything you want to talk about? No, what he said to me is, well, what do you think? I said, well, I'm going to tell you what I think because I know my body and I know when something is wrong. I mean, if you have a pain and it doesn't go away ever for months and months and months, I think you should get it checked out. Something is wrong.
Yeah.
Your body is telling you. You know, and it's but that's what it's about. They go into this for the wrong reason. They really do.
Well, I'm not fully in agreement on that, and I do want to say
not
in defense. And let me just say this in defense of doctors, they are trained with one fundamental principle, and that is the preservation of life. And they have all of these bells and whistles and new technologies of new tests and new things that they can do that they are caught up in being expected to bring to any situation. But the one thing that they have never been taught to handle is death. And they perceive death very often as a personal failure because they're not preserving life. So the idea that it's time for me to pass you over to hospice so that they can give you comfort in your last days has not yet become normalized in our society. It is a social problem that we have in how we educate our doctors and how they practice medicine. Okay, we have not incorporated the end of life as part of life. We see it as a failure for ourselves and for our doctors. So we're all caught up in that, and we need to change that. And that's why I wrote this book, is to help people understand that we are being hoodwinked by an elephant in the room, you know, where we don't know how to deal with death, and we need to normalize it. And I want to say one other thing, that for any of your listeners who have never attended a death cafe, have you attended one, Natalie?
No. Oh, no. What are those?
Death cafes are a phenomenal, there's a website, deathcafe.com. I think they started in, 2011, not that long ago, in Europe. And somebody came up with the idea of, let's get total strangers together, have a cup of coffee, eat a piece of cake, and let's talk about death, because nobody talks about death. And let me tell you, it is one of the most eye-opening experiences you could ever, ever have, because total strangers will comfortably share their vulnerability and their fears with each other about how they feel about death, but they won't talk to their spouse or their children. They won't fill out their healthcare proxy or fill out their will because, I don't like to think about those things.
Yeah.
And that's all because we have a death taboo. Our society has not served us well in teaching us how to relate to death in a healthy way.
It's true.
Yeah.
It is very true. You hit the
nail
on the head.
That's why I wrote my book.
Well, it makes a lot of sense. I don't know if Sarah sent it to me or not. I'm going to have to give her a little buzz here. But anyways, I got your welcome. I signed up. I got your welcome letter. So go to Judith Johnson, JudithJohnson.com, and you're going to see This little doofliky thing, let me go back to it so I can tell them. It says, "The secret to true happiness lies within." You click on that, and you'll see it's a hyperlink, and the hyperlink means that it's a clickable, and that's what I do for the magazines, or I do hyperlinks. And you click on that, and you go to her mailing list, and then you get a confirmation email, and then you get your free download, which I'm going to download.
And you're going to love it. I want you to email me and let me know what you thought of the download. Okay, Natalie.
I will. Yes. I have a feeling we're going to be talking quite a bit. I think.
Yes.
I think too, what you are doing is so important for the world, and it's so important for the magazine. So probably next month I will hit you up for an article or something, and that's what I do. I once you're in, see, sorry, Judy, Judith, you're in my realm. I don't know if they call you Judy or Judith, but you're in my realm.
I'm a Judith.
Now, so, yeah, okay, because this Latin man I interviewed, he said, "You have a friend in me forever." And
yeah.
He wrote me an email, and he said, "I love your energy, and anytime you want something from me, just holler." And I said, "Well, I get your email now. It's all over." But that's how I bring the love and the light to the world, is with people
right.
like you, you see.
Right.
So I have to keep tapping everybody, you know, poets and all that kind of stuff. I have this gal from China. I have two people from China, and she is this young girl, and she talks a little broken in her emails, and it was really cute. She said, "Do you take people from foreign countries?" Oh, I wrote back, "My dear, go look at my magazine. I have people from Japan, China. I have a gal in Berlin that does a monthly column all over the world." And she was so excited. She sends me X's and O's, you know, and makes me feel really good because, but she talks a little, you can see how her emails are. She speaks probably pretty well. And I have another man who taught me, and I didn't know this, that the last name is really the first name. And
right.
I wrote him this time. I said, "You know what? I think I got it right this time." It's so funny. And one time I asked him, I said, "Well, will you write my name in Chinese?" So immediately I get an email. You know, it's all these little sticks, like I call them sticks, going one way and another way. And I wrote him back. I said, "This is my name." He said, "Yes, this is your name." And you can hear him bowing, kind of. I can or see him bowing, not hearing. Like, "Yes, this is your name." You know, like. Very, very sweet. And I have a man from Japan does the same thing. I mean, you know, I'm amazed at these people in other countries, how really great they are. Countries that, like China, you know, you'd be surprised at the beautiful people that are there. And I know.
Well, look at the beautiful people in our country and how different that is from what we hear on the news about what's going on in our country. There are wonderful people
garbage.
All over
it's
the world.
It's all garbage. You know, I get this feed all the time on my phone, and, oh, he did this, he did that, you know, and you see the station that's writing about it. Oh, well, you don't like the Democrats or you don't like the Republicans, so that's why you're picking on. So what? I mean, you know, let the people lead. Shut up. But that's news. That's you know, sensationalism. That's what they have to do. But you would never catch me writing like that. It would be nothing
no.
but kind words. Kind
but,
words.
But, you know, again, going back to your work, bringing love and light to the world, what is so wonderful is when that's what you authentically do, and it is what you authentically do, it comes back to you. So you're in
yeah.
a circle of love all the time. When
I
used to officiate weddings, there was a line I had in there that was about the wedding ring and that it served as a reminder of the circle of love, that we give and receive love back and forth to each other. And that when that authentically is flowing, there's nothing better. There's nothing
no.
at all that's better. And at the end of, you probably saw on my website, love. I have a statement, love is our first and most sacred priority. And I believe that, is that when we put our effort into creating that atmosphere, that kind of relationship with one another, that's what lifts the world, and that's what will heal us more than anything else.
Right, and you know, maybe, you know, and what I'm doing, I've always loved it. I have not stopped dreading, oh, geez, I got to put this one in. It's just like, okay, let's check the link, make sure everything is like you like it. I can change it. Instantly, because I do it all myself, and it's not that difficult. And actually, I have this gal who's in Kenya, who I want to do a flip magazine. I want to make it turn the pages. I've always wanted to do that, and I always felt my magazine was my dark horse. Isn't that funny? I thought it would come from behind. I knew it would come from behind. And so I had the magazine. You'll actually be able to turn the pages. I'll have a featured person on the cover. It'll have classifieds. It can have full-page ads, half-page ads. I've already got it all in my head. It's just a matter of doing it. And I had a lot of help. This girl is amazing. She said, well, I can do it all for you. I said, no, I don't want you to do it all for me. We Zoom every Saturday. I want to do it. You set up my templates, and I'll have you look at it, or if I'm having a problem, because this, she's a designer. This is what she does. And I said, because it's got to have me there. That's me. The magazine is me. The other site is me. It's got to have my love and everything that I want for everybody over it. It can't be done by anybody else. And I had the opportunity to have it be done by everybody else. I would get all the material and send it to somebody, and they wanted $300 to do it. And I said to my webmaster, no, absolutely not. Well, he said it would get done right away. I said it's double work for me because they'll make mistakes, and I have to go back and fix it. Because, like, if you write for the magazine, I send you a link to the page before it goes up because it doesn't go up until the 1st. I can see it, but they can't. And you look at it and say, well, you know, Natalie, this spelling is a little wrong and I want to change this. Good, we'll change it. You see, I have full control. I don't want to give that up, and I'm not going to either. So that's another dream I have. And then, Judith, I have a fairy tale that I started to write, and I want my granddaughter to do the illustrations.
Oh, lovely.
She was accepted to SCAD, which is Savannah College of Art and Design. That's not far from us, like 30 minutes. And she can really draw. I mean, not like, you know, Van Gogh, any of these pictures of these people. She just has this ability. I've seen it for years. So, you know, this is all the things, all my dreams. Those are my dreams on my list.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Lovely, lovely. Well, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here with you.
Oh, me too. Me too. My goodness, my goodness. We have had such a great talk. It's been wonderful. We're going to do this again. And I'm going to see you because I am going to be in these Zoom things with you. Oh, I can't wait. I'll be in class. Excuse me, everybody. I have a class to attend. I love it. With a beautiful lady. You are a beautiful lady.
Take care and bless you and happy holidays to you.
Same to you. And look for my email.
I will. All right.
I'll
be well.
All right. You too, honey. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, everybody. That's the show for today. Let me see. I have another one on Friday, 3 to 4. She is a fashion designer, but she's also very spiritual. And that's going to be, like I said, from 3 to 4. And then... now, around the holidays, I take a little break, you know, like Christmas week. Prior to that, I don't have any interviews, but I do the week before. And then after, like the week of the 27th, I have two that week. So that's good. That's good. But yours truly needs to take a break, you know. I'll probably have my granddaughter here. We'll be baking cookies and all that kind of good stuff. But anyways, as I always end my show, don't forget, believe in things you cannot see. They really are there. And with that, I'll say goodbye. I love all of you.